It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back, everybody. It's the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by Reality Sports Online. I'm your host, Scott Bogman, and I'm joined, as always, by Pat Fitzmaurice at FitzFF on the Twitter. And we got a special guest in here to talk about wide receivers and tight ends in the draft. It is Thor Nystrom from NBC Sports Edge. You can find him at ThorKU. Before we dive in and do this, I got to tell you guys about a couple things that we are offering right now. We've got the Dynasty Rookie Draft Kit out right now. So with the NFL Draft coming up, I want to tell you about this kit. You can find it at fantasypros.com/rookie. We've got Dynasty Rankings, Trade Advice, Startup, and Rookie Draft Strategy articles, Prospect and Veteran Profiles, Mock Drafts, and the latest news. Some of the content is free, but if you want to get the most out of the draft kit, you have to be a subscriber. Go premium today. If you haven't already, head to our Dynasty Rookie Draft Kit at fantasypros.com/rookie. Also, we've got a new contest for April. It is a DK Metcalf autographed jersey, which, look, if he gets traded in the draft, could be a collector's item here. So make sure you're getting on it. All you got to do to enter for that is go to youtube.com/fantasypros, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and take a screenshot of that, submit it at fantasypros.com/dynastycontest, and that ends at the end of April, so get in as soon as you possibly can and do it. Pat, what is your weekend like? We've had a lot of baseball going on right now, obviously, with opening day. We had a lot of rookie draft kit things we had to get done. So you and I were communicating a lot this weekend. Bogman, you didn't put a comp in for this guy. Bogman, let's get a comp here. So a lot of that. But how was your weekend, my friend?
It was good, Bogman, and it involved a lot of college basketball, including a classic Duke-North Carolina game on Saturday night. And then, you know, it's extended into Monday, which is why I'm kind of excited to have Thor on. Like, it's not often you can bring in a Kansas University grad right after a national championship. So I'm pretty fired up about that. And Thor looks pretty good. So he might have kept the Malort shots to a minimum last night after the title. And I mean, Thor, I got to know, like, what were you thinking when it was a 15-point deficit at halftime?
There was, let's just say my BAC at that time was very high. you know, like you get the nerves before a title, you know, your team's in a title game, you get the nerves. But like, you know, I was working all the way up till the game. So it's not like I started earlier, had an all day sort of party, I had guys over and, you know, you're enjoying a drink at the beginning, and Kansas jumped out to a 7-0 lead. And I think the first time there was a TV timeout, it was 9-3. So I was was feeling all right. But then Kansas played like the worst 15 minutes plus stretch that they have literally the entire season. And like all these bunnies weren't going in, and then North Carolina couldn't miss for a while. And all of a sudden the empties were just started to populate around my feet, you know, and like I was starting to get bitter, you know, like I'm a Minnesota sports fan, you know, I'm coming to you guys from Minneapolis. So the bitterness and the stoicism and the skepticism of my sports teams, like it was ingrained into me as a child, like, a Vikings fan and a Twins fan and this sort of stuff. So I'm always just sort of bracing myself to get my nuts kicked. And so the bitterness had definitely descended by halftime, but luckily Kansas was able to snap out of it. And luckily for my guests as well, that Kansas was able to snap out of it in the second half and ended up having a really fun night.
Yeah, I mean, look, far be it from me to give a bunch of, accolades to Kansas. We were talking about this before the show. I'm a Texas fan, obviously, Thor, a KU grad, and Kansas came in and beat my Longhorns in Austin. First game I went to in 27 years on the 40 acres, and Kansas comes in and wins their first ever game against Texas. I mean, look, the story's better with Kansas winning that game than, you know, Texas winning by 30 like they usually do. So, we'll take it. But congrats, Thor. Also, a big shout out to you for not being completely hungover to do this show. So, like you said, putting it away and getting up for work the next day. That's an American right there. God bless you. So we are going to talk about some of these wide receivers and tight ends today. And you've got a bunch of scouting profiles coming out. And I believe you were saying before your wide receiver rankings are coming out this week, right?
Later this week. Yeah. Yeah. So it's exciting because, like, you know, earlier in the draft process, like, you know, I'm certainly involved in the dialogue on Twitter and stuff like that. But, you know, some people have their rankings out earlier, and it's hard to sort of speak to that or you know, start to overtly disagree with some guys' rankings when yours aren't out there yet. And you don't want to sort of let the cat out of the bag all the way. my draft crushes tend to be, you know, I tend to wear them on my sleeve, so I can't do it all the way, but it's definitely fun to get the rankings out and then sort of enter that broader conversation about, you know, where guys should go and then who I'm way higher on or way lower than, you know, in comparison to the consensus.
So let's dive in. And you know, the top five wide receivers by most people's metrics, this is the group at the top, would be Garrett Wilson, Treylon Burks, Jameson Williams, Drake London, Chris Olave, right? Dotson kind of comes in and out of that. Pickens, Watson kind of come in and out of that group there. So is that group kind of how you see it, the top five? Is there anyone that you don't agree that goes in there? Is there anyone that stands out? And is there anybody else that needs to go in there in this group of the top five?
Without giving too much away, I could have another entrant into the top five. I think there's it's at least worthy of having the conversation about him. And it's not Jahan Dotson, the guy that you would have thought initially, although I do like Jahan Dotson. He's a better prospect than KJ Hamler, certainly coming out of the same offense. Yeah. It's Christian Watson. At this point, Christian, you know, I've said this, but like he's knocking on the door of round one. And by definition, he is knocking on the door of the top five receivers. He's right there. I mean, like you talk about a dominant pre-draft process.
Yeah.
Goes to the Senior Bowl, and anyone that didn't have exposure on Christian Watson, I'm not going to name names on that account, but he certainly knocked their socks off. And it wasn't just that. I think I was, you know, I don't want to say a full convert because I was definitely too low on him compared to where he's going to end up coming in. But I knew of the core strengths of his game pretty well because I'd scouted Trey Lance close, and I live pretty close to Fargo. So I don't watch their regular season games because I'm covering the FBS, but when NDSU starts to do their playoff runs, which they do every single year, I'll watch their games live. And Trey Lance was, he was an awesome FCS player to watch for obvious reason. We talked about him a lot last year, but every time on the receiving end of all those bombs that he threw, it was always Christian Watson.
Yeah.
So even people that don't think that they've watched Christian Watson tape before, you actually have. You've seen plenty of his long touchdowns. But he went to Mobile and he proved that he could do one of the things that we didn't see as much on the tape, which was running a full route tree and specifically winning in the intermediate area of the field. NDSU's offense just didn't feature as many of those throws and routes. Like, as a matter of course, it was more the vertical passing game and then sort of that dynamic running game that included both, you know, the obviously the running backs and then the quarterback these past few years with Lance with the dual threat element. But they would also do all these cool things with Watson as far as the end around game or even bringing him into the backfield and giving him like Deebo Samuel type handoffs. The other cool thing that we saw in Mobile that we had seen on tape as well was he's just a dogged blocker. Like every single play he gives such good effort and he issue the entire offensive scheme that if you're on the field there, not just offensive lineman, you have to block and he's one of the better blockers in this class as well. And I haven't even mentioned the fact that he's 6'4", 210. And
yeah. Runs like a deer.
Exactly. Yeah. and that's the thing that jumps off the tape most. It's that downfield utility, you know, and like I said, you've seen some of that on the Lance film. Lance could not overthrow Christian Watson. I Malik Willis can try, but I don't know if even him or Josh Allen can. So I think he's on the doorstep at this point. So that would be the one other entrant I would toss in.
I mean, the dream, Pat, would be Christian Watson goes to replace Tyreek Hill in Kansas City. Like, I think that would be the absolute dream, right? I mean, how high does he go in a redraft if he goes to Kansas City?
Right. Very high. I mean, in redraft, like if we're talking rookie dynasty drafts, like he's certainly a first rounder, even in super flex drafts. In redraft, I mean, I think that would certainly put him in the at least wide receiver three conversation.
And dynasty, you got to push him up. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he goes to Kansas City and the other landing spots are kind of, you know, no one else has that leap team that just, oh my God, look at this scenario. I think Christian Watson would be in play for the number one wideout in fantasy drafts, in dynasty drafts, because he's, you know, I think the thing, it's the exact thing that Thor just mentioned, right? It's the, okay, you've seen him do it at NDSU, right? So you go, okay, well, this guy is great. Is he great at the FCS level or is he a great wide receiver? And then he goes to Mobile and he's the best guy of the bunch there. And no one for wide receivers outside of maybe Kyle Phillips, you know, boosted their draft stock more that week than Christian Watson. And obviously Phillips was at Shrine Bowl. But I mean, Watson, like you said, Thor, just tons of upside. Where would you put him in terms of dynasty if he landed in a place like Kansas City?
So one point I was going to make about that, and you guys are the fantasy experts, but there was one other you have sort of those ideal places like Kansas City that make, you know, intuitive sense, right? Because of the amount of balls being put up in the air, you're playing with an awesome quarterback, and then you have all these vacated touches. But I want to make one other point where I think there's sort of less, how would you say, less attractive on the surface situations that will also lead to potentially immediate fantasy utility out of Christian
Chicago.
Watson.
Yeah.
Chicago would be one for sure.
Green Bay.
He would be a perfect complement for Mooney on the other. Like you couldn't get any better than that. But one of them going even lower than that is Houston. If Houston, first of all, if they trade Brandon Cooks, by definition, Watson would be their number one, number one receiver immediately. He might even be with Brandon Cooks on the roster. And, you know, as you guys know, they're always down. They are every year. So, you know, there's going to be plenty of balls put in the air. Davis Mills he's at least a decent pocket passer. He's not much of a fantasy player, but he can at least, you know, throw the ball a little bit, and he should be able to get the ball downfield to Watson. The other thing is that I was thinking about as far as specifically a team like Houston, the stuff he can do as a runner and out of the backfield, you know, again, both in the end around game, but then also bring him into the backfield. If you want to do that, a team like Houston might give him a ton of extra touches just as a runner, just because their ground game is so abysmal and they're trying to do anything they can to help out their quarterback that's now going to be, you know, starting for the full season, the young kid. So they could squeeze extra utility out of Watson by doing that. And you start to think about just how many touches Watson could get if, for instance, he gets drafted by Houston. Let's say he falls to the 37th pick. I don't see him going much later than that.
Yeah. But
let's say he's there and Houston didn't take a wide receiver in the first round. He would make a world of sense, and he's going to get a ton of catches in year one, I think.
Now, Pat, do you have any more of this top tier? You want to ask Thor about any of these guys from the top tier?
Yeah, I'm curious, Thor. Jahan Dotson, and Chris Olave. Like, it sounds like you maybe question whether Dotson belongs kind of near that tier, but like in some ways, his game reminds me a lot of Olave's. Like, what do you see as being maybe the gap there? Like, what are the differences between those two guys? What can't Dotson do that Olave can?
It's with Olave, there's an elevated understanding, I think, of leverage and route running. Like that's what he's really good at. I don't think that Dotson, and by the way, a part of this is not Dotson's fault. Dotson sort of like, you have the thing of like, it wasn't quite as bad, but like the thing that happened to, I mean, this happens to a lot of college players, like Laviska Shenault, Rondale Moore, Treylon Burks is another guy where this was in this class. I Trey McBride would be an example of a tight end where they're, you know, such singularly better than every other skill guy on that team that their team invariably just finds ways to force them the ball in ways that sometimes don't help their development. In some ways might even hurt it a bit, you know, like that's why Burks, you know, even though he projects as an outside starter in the NFL, that, you know, some people, you know, like the raw element, it's because they didn't line him up there all the time. You know, he lined up there like 50% of the time or less. Cause he was, you know, they would have him, you know, all over the place in the slot, in the backfield, you know, all this different stuff. With Dotson, it was more, a couple different things. First of all, Penn State's offensive line struggled the last couple of years. Their running backs were way down. I mean, in part because of the offensive line, but Penn State really struggled to run the ball the last couple of years. And then their quarterback Clifford, like he's one of them, you know, he's like a poor man's Trace McSorley, sort of like, you know, he's, you know, or a poor man's Ian Book or something like that. Like he's just a little noodle armed scrambler. And so he couldn't do much of stuff downfield. So like basically like Dotson had a lot of manufactured touches. He also had a ton of touches that occurred within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, sort of on quick hitters. And the plus aspect about his game is he's very kinetic and very twitchy as an athlete. And so you try to get him the ball and then just have him sort of like evade defenders. Like it becomes a high speed, you know, car chase or whatever. He's got agility. And then he certainly got the long speed for it. With Olave, it was what you got to see over his 3 years. Cause he had all sorts of targets for, you know, 3 years at the top of what was a stacked wide receiver depth chart at Ohio State. It wasn't just Garrett Wilson. It wasn't just Jackson Smith and Jigba, who will be the first wide receiver taken next April. Guarantee you that. But it was also Jameson Williams. Jameson Williams had to transfer to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, so that he could get on the field and get targets because of how ridiculous that receiving core was. And Olave was just really advanced with the footwork, the releases off the line, and then the route running. You so rarely see guys up close on him. He just sort of naturally, like just as a matter of course, is like natural, like breathing creates separation on his routes. That's his special sauce. And he's better at it than, you know, it's no slight on Dotson. Like I said, situationally Dotson was at a disadvantage because the offense just had to force feed him the ball within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage quickly. But Olave, he damn near the top of the class in terms of the route running.
I mean, great info there. I want to talk about the second tier real quick, Thor. And we've got guys like, you know, Sky Moore is getting a lot of buzz right now. A lot of people didn't watch him at Western Michigan. They're turning on the tape now and going, wow, you know, better than D. Eskridge, a lot of people are saying. Another guy out of Western Michigan. We just talked about Dotson a little bit. John Metchie, who's coming off the injury for Bama. Pickens, who had some off the field stuff, but always performed when he was on the field. I love Jalen Tolbert. Khalil Shakir is a guy that's gotten a lot of buzz. David Bell was a big time producer at Purdue. Calvin Austin, Justin Ross. Is there anyone that stands above this group of potential day two wide receivers for you that you like? Is there anyone that people are too hyped on and you want to go after that? Like you said, you can't argue if your rankings aren't out there, but you can talk down on someone if you want. Is there anyone that stands out to you up or down on this list?
Yeah. So, you know, one sort of macro point that I make, but before the micro ones is this, you know, some people have been a little bit down on this receiver class. I saw a tweet from someone that I very much respect today that, you know, he was saying that the receiver class is a little down. And I think sort of like the discussion with the quarterback class, what that is, I think it's specifically speaking to the very, very top of the class, right, is down in comparison to recent years, like the very, very top ones. But this, and another similarity with the quarterback class is this receiver class, I think, is very deep in those secondary tiers that are going to get picked on day two. And why that should interest people, in contrast to the quarterback position, where you so very rarely see bonanza lottery tickets purchased on day two, you don't see an enormous hit rate. And on the guys that do, it's more that they're, you know, they have a chance to become like a league average or slightly below, like a Davis Mills, right?
Right.
But right. Way more often you get the burned picks. Like it already seems like both Kyle Trask and Kellen Mond are burned picks. And that wasn't, you know, not a huge surprise on that account. But receivers, there's an enormous contrast to that. Day two wide receivers hit all the time. I mean, especially in round two, that's like the breeding ground for awesome receivers that you can get on a discount. You just sort of like the NFL consistently makes evaluation mistakes on these guys. And so there's going to be really good ones that filter down. It's just about picking the correct one and maybe not, you know, for instance, Dwayne Eskridge or Tutu Atwell to use last season as an example.
That's why the Rams don't have any picks. They're not good with them anyway. So just trade them, you know.
Exactly.
But who stands out in this second day group?
So the specific guys that I like Sky Moore for sure. You know, earlier on, you know, a month and a half ago or so, I would have said that, you know, he was one of my favorite sleepers in the class, but nobody's sleeping on him anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, he is going to go on day two for sure. I don't think he gets into round one, but I do think he's going on day two. So he made himself a lot of money testing, because the one thing that he had to prove was that he was an upper echelon athlete. He didn't have to, like, you know, test like Tutu Atwell or you know, Eskridge, or like it wasn't a requirement, but he just had to prove that he was athletic enough to be able to win out of the slot. And he way more than did that. Like he tested, I think, better than anyone thought he was going to. So then the interesting part about his evaluation becomes, even though his projection in the NFL for sure is to the slot, like directly into the slot, that's what he's going to play at the next level. Western Michigan played him outside a lot. Like that's what he was predominantly. Now they played him out of the slot some too, but he was predominantly an outside receiver and their best receiver for Caleb Ellaby. The cool thing about that, one thing that we got to see him consistently prove that he could do, is for a smaller receiver, right? Like his, let me pull up his measurements from the process. 5'9" and 1/8" and 195 pounds. So on the smaller side, as far as that goes, he gets off the line as good as anyone in the class, because his footwork is so damn good. He has a wide assortment for cornerbacks. So it's hard to even guess on him. Like Patrick Surtain in the last class was a guy who was like, you know, would just ravenously study the tape. And then he could like had a good sense for like, you know, what guys were going to do even off of the line. But like Sky Moore is like a pitcher that has 8 or 9 pitches and they're all really good. So it's sort of hard to sit on anything. It was difficult for guys to jam him. Now, you know, you were in the MAC. Right. I mean, you were drawing their number one cornerback, but it was, you know, it's an outside cornerback in the MAC. You knew that he had the footwork. You know that he's going to be able to get off the line no matter what, even in the NFL. It was just, did he have that athletic profile where you could sort of start to project him as, oh, is he going to be an upper tier, you know, top 10, maybe even top 5 NFL slot? And that's what the athletic testing did. So he is confined to a slot, even though he played at Western Michigan outside. He going inside, but I think he's going to be a damn good slot. And I think round two is where you're going to see Sky Moore go.
All right. I got to tell you about Reality Sports Online. And by now, most of you have already heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? It's time to go and see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about. Free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. Think it sounds complicated? It's not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online front office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league. It just requires more strategy. That is it. Think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, test your mettle on this platform. Still not sure? You can test your general manager skills for free, FREE, in a mock free agency auction right now. If you like what you see, use the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at Reality Sports Online. Now, Thor.
But that actually sounds dope.
Have you ever played in a league like that? They're fun, dude. We need to get one going. We'll get one going for sure.
I would love to. I believe that the site. So I got to check that one out. I love the ability to construct the rosters and the stuff like that. I play like both the ridiculous dynasty versions of this and also on this other website, the computer simulation where you're putting together
a simulation one.
So like on both ends of it, I just like the extra, you know, added dimension of like putting roster construction with constraints.
That's how I came up playing fantasy, dude. My first like keeper league, I had offensive linemen and punters and contracts and RFAs and free agents. It was crazy. So those platforms are always fun, and Reality Sports obviously offers a great one. Pat, who do you want to ask Thor about in this second group? Because it's hard to pick. I like all of these guys, you know, and I feel like I get a little too Pollyanna on prospects when they're coming out. I'm like, okay, I like this, I like that. Well, who do you not like? I'm like, well, I mean, they're all pretty decent, but is there a guy that stands out that you want to ask Thor about?
Yeah, well, we talked about Thor's Kansas loyalty, but I know Thor's also got some loyalty to Iowa. And back when Iowa was riding high and undefeated, David Bell pretty much came into Iowa City and just laid waste to the Hawkeyes. 11 catches, 240 yards, and a touchdown.
Did you have to remind me, Pat?
Sorry about that, Thor. Don't feel picked on by David Bell, because he pretty much had the same game against Michigan State later in the season, too. Route running, footwork, like there's a lot going on for David Bell, but his testing was just kind of disastrous. Not just the speed, but like eighth percentile agility testing at the combine. So like, how much do you worry about that with his game? I mean, like, pure speed has never really been his game. But like, are you concerned that not only did he not run well at the combine, but like the agility testing was so poor too?
Yes, the agility thing predominantly. As you were talking, I pulled up his RAS card to see, you know, what the pro day ones in there as well. He pulled the overall RAS up a little bit, but still a 4 flat. So, you know, 40th percentile size adjusted, better than the nightmare it came out after the combine. Because I think like coming out of the combine, he was like, well, do you remember what it was, Pat? It was like 22nd percentile or something.
Yeah. So for agility, I saw 8th percentile, but I'm not sure about overall like spark or RAS. Oh, yes. So yeah.
Yeah. He was able to swap out a couple of these numbers. He ran the 4.65, I think, came from Indy, but I think a couple of these secondary ones he got to swap out from the pro day. But yeah, the concern for sure is the agility thing, because, you know, he got peppered with targets at Purdue. He's very good at the catch point. And like what you like about him is understands the game really well, like understands, you know, leveraging cornerbacks and stuff like that. And then at the catch point, he shields guys out. He's very physical. He's, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but he's, you know, 6'1", 212 and very well built. You know, play strength is a strength of his, you know, as far as receiver goes. But the concern you had is that he never, you know, like, you know, in contrast to what I was saying about Olave, that he sort of naturally gets separation. You got to see David Bell's, you know, his very good receiving skill and his catch point skill, his contested catch skill, because a lot of times there was guys in his grill there. And the concern for these guys at the NFL level is that they're not going to create. I mean, if they weren't doing it in the Big Ten, now you go to the next level and it's going to get way harder. That you're concerned about guys that are sort of led with their contested catch or their ball skills foot. I'm bullish enough in him as far as understanding how to play the position, the route running, understanding how to use his body and stuff like that. And I don't think he's completely disqualified with these testing with this profile. I still think that you, whether it's late day two or whether it's early day three, that's probably where I would take the stab on him. But you're looking at an NFL possession receiver that you're hoping can be your number two, well, probably your number three receiver, but a starting secondary outside receiver. And then, you know, hopefully the number one guy for you is on the other side. And then hopefully you got a good slot receiver that's getting a lot of touches as well. In that sort of a thing, I think David Bell, when you can guarantee him single coverage on the one side where there's not going to be any help. I think that's a better scenario for him going up against a number two cornerback in the NFL, because I think at least the possession receiver parts of his game are they're going to translate, but you can't expect him to ever be like an explosive receiver or put up like enormous receiving yardage. I think you're looking at a chain mover possession guy as your number two. So
let me ask you about some day three guys here, Thor, because we have the first group, we have the second group, and like you said, maybe we don't have a CeeDee Lamb or Ja'Marr Chase at the front of this, but the top guys are still very good. The secondary guys are way better than a normal class. So it's hard to separate these day three guys because there's so many good ones. I mean, a guy I didn't mention that probably goes into day two is Alec Pierce. Yep. Great testing numbers. He's a big dude. But day three guys, Tyquan Thornton had incredible numbers at the combine. Kevin Austin, another guy with crazy numbers. To the point, it got to the point where you thought, all right, is Charlie Casserly not running the timing here?
Yeah.
Completely ruining the combine? Like, are we actually getting all these crazy RAS scores and Spark and all that? Like, so those guys ran some great
something
numbers.
Something changed. I mean, year over year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, this year, I one thing I saw where they crunched the numbers, it was 5/100ths of a second guys were, in comparison to normal years, cutting it off of their combine times. I mean, great and fine, but there has to be an explanation outside of the fact that this class is appreciably more athletic than the classes before it. So, but anyway.
I know they changed some of the testing times too. Some of those guys were going real late. Some of them were a little more early. You know, it's just. There were some weird changes.
The discrepancies between the initial unofficial times and then what we saw later.
That was crazy.
I mean, by far the craziest of any year that I feel confident in saying, like, modern times, the craziest for sure.
Somebody tweeted out, like, if Jameson Williams had ran, he would have ran a 3.9 in this because the times are so high. But those guys, Thornton, Austin, you can put Alec Pierce in there. Great times. Kyle Phillips had a great Shrine Bowl. Wandell Robinson is a guy out of Kentucky that I've always kind of liked. I know there's some buzz for Romeo Dubs. Velus Jones ran a great time. Charleston Rambo finally had production getting out of Oklahoma and going to Miami. How do you separate these day three guys? Obviously, you know, the draft will tell us where NFL teams are evaluating them. They'll all have way different value than they do pre-draft, of course, in terms of fantasy. But who are some guys that you're in on as far as day three dart throws?
Yeah, a lot of names there. I mean, we could even go through them individually if you want. But like, Bogman, I'm with you on Wandale Robinson. Pat didn't zing me with Wandale, but he definitely could have, because Wandale lit up Iowa, both at Nebraska in 2020 and this past year. Twice. And this is what really ticked me.
Well, this is our boy Nick Allen. You know, we both know Nick Allen, CFP winning edge guy. This is his favorite player, is Wandale Robinson. Oh, one of his favorites for sure. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, it's notable because Nick Allen's a savage. I know. Yeah. I mean, Nick Allen does the work, watches the games, and has a better understanding of just about anyone than, you know, with the numbers, his analytics and stuff like that. So it's always notable when a guy that is that zeroed in on a subject, a guy stands out to him. But Wandale Robinson was the only reason that Iowa lost their bowl game this past year. They were playing Kentucky. We were playing our old nemesis, Wandale Robinson. And he single-handedly beat Iowa. Without Wandale Robinson, Kentucky doesn't win that game. They barely can move on offense. Wandale Robinson was the one guy that was overcoming Iowa's defense, and he did it just enough to sort of, you know, pull Kentucky by in this low-scoring game. He's going to be a slot for sure, but I think like in people's heads, you know, whether it was, you know, him being a little bit under the radar in, you know, playing with Adrian Martinez and, you know, Scott Frost's initial, you know, whatever he was trying to do on offense there, wasn't a great situation. And then, you know, this past season, you know, I don't know how many people caught, you know, Wandale with Kentucky or whatever, but, you know, if you conflate him, or you think about the last Kentucky guy that came out of this slot and you start to conflate him with Lynn Bowden, you're doing yourself a disservice, because Wandale is a better athlete than he is, for sure. and he's also a smoother receiver than Lynn Bowden is. You can really pepper Wandale Robinson with targets. He's athletic enough too. I mean, he is definitely going to play as an NFL slot. The utility with him, it doesn't stretch way down the field. That's not what you're doing with him. So with Wandale, I'd want him on a team where my outside receivers can create that spacing downfield, you know, at least have one pop the top guy. And then another guy that can attack, you know, at least on the further stretches of the intermediate area, early shallow area, that will open up plenty of space for Wandale, particularly if you have a tight end on the other side that can take away this seam. Like if Wandale Robinson is really difficult for nickel defenders to deal with in space, and he doesn't mind catching the ball, working around traffic, working, you know, getting hit right after he catches the ball, like, and he's very smooth once he corrals that ball, pointing himself upfield and starting to gobble up yards. So I think Wandale Robinson is underrated, coming from the context that he did of both those offenses, coming into the NFL, and then the fact that, like, you know, like I said, sort of the tier he's in just so happens to be very crowded. And I think some of these other toys have been a little bit maybe shinier for some of us draft folks to sort of talk about and stuff like that. But Wandale Robinson he's so consistent, and you know that he's going to catch a crap ton of balls every year in the NFL, that, you know, I wanted to give him the thumbs up and tell you I'm on the same page with him too.
All right. I mean, Pat, pick some guys out of here, because I'm having trouble. There's so many good wide receivers in this class. Is there someone you want to ask about, or like maybe a process thing you want to ask Thor about here?
There's a process thing, Thor, I'm kind of curious about. Like, there are certain guys who are tough evaluations for you, I'm sure, because the quarterback play is so bad. Like, you just talked about Wandale at Nebraska and everything. And we've seen guys like DJ Moore, although DJ Moore was pretty unanimously highly regarded when he came out. But Josh Palmer was kind of a guy like that last year, coming out of Tennessee. Debo. Yeah, is there anyone who kind of fits in this class who maybe someone you like despite the terrible quarterbacking they've seen over their career?
How dare you cast aspersions against Jared Guarantano as a drive-by during the setup for that question, Pat? Yes, the answer is for sure yes. And, you know, like the broader point I would make is I once asked, I have a colleague I work with. Do you guys know the name Chris Crawford? That, yes. I work with. Yeah. So Crawford, he's done a little bit of work with us on the college football side, but mostly he's a baseball writer. That's what he predominantly does, and predominantly with prospects. So I've had a couple conversations with him over the telephone talking about process and the differences between the two. And my initial supposition was it was way harder to scout baseball. Like, 'cause to me, that seems like, you know, like me having to start a life if I walked off of a spaceship, right? Like, like how would you even start, you know, sort of a thing. And so, like, for me, it seems like trigonometry. But Crawford, who has a little bit of experience doing it with football, not nearly as much, but enough, he said it's way easier to scout baseball, because the difference is baseball is an individual sport masquerading as a team sport, whereas football, it is such a team sport that it's difficult to unspool one from the other.
Thor, we talked about this last week, because I was talking about how I don't like ranking prospects for fantasy until they're drafted.
Yeah,
because context means so much.
Sure does.
In that scenario.
Yes.
And baseball, because this is the difference between the Welsh and I over at In This League. The Welsh does the minor league prospect list. He's like, why don't you just throw up some rankings for some of these draft prospects? I'm like, well, my ranking could be completely different after the draft in terms of fantasy than it is before, because if I have a great guy, like, I love Jalen Tolbert, but if he lands, you know, somewhere where they're already great, if he lands in Dallas and he's behind a bunch of wide receivers and Dalton Schultz at tight end, his value is way different than if he lands in Chicago or with the Chargers, where he can go be a slot guy. You know, it's just so different no matter where you land. So this is a great question, Pat.
Yeah. So is there anyone like that for you in this class, Thor, like, who was handicapped by bad quarterbacking?
Yes. The biggest one that jumps out to me, and he's one of my favorite day three sleepers in this class, is Bo Melton from Rutgers. I think if Bo Melton had played at, let's say, Alabama, or, you know, like one of these other, you know, Oklahoma, a school like that, he would have been on All-American teams. Like that's the kind of.
He's saying he's better than Slade Bolden.
He is way better than Slade Bolden. He is way better than Slade Bolden. I thought it was funny that Slade Bolden declared for the draft. But anyway, that's a story for another one. Yes, Slade Bolden had a heat check on himself on that one. But yeah, I mean, wait, who were we just talking about?
Bo Melton.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, for people that look into some of the advanced stats, or, you know, just were able to watch his the fleshed out versions of his routes on, you know, on every single play. First of all, in the latter, he's another guy that just naturally creates separation. He's got ridiculously, the way I'll put it is he's got lightning in his feet, like right off of the snap. It's very, very kinetic. It's hard for defenders to even stay with. And he changes direction so quickly. You know, he can just do a little, you know, move, and you know, it's sort of like the soccer kicker on penalty kicks where the goalie dives the wrong way. Like sometimes it's like that with him. He can keep you off balance because his feet are just so good. And then he's so damn quick. And he has speed as well, but like the short area quickness and the agility, as far as being a route runner, and then the footwork, the ability to make some of these hard cuts, you know, and then sink into routes and come back, like stuff like that. He's got the tools for all of it. We've seen it on film. It's just he didn't have the quarterback, wasn't playing in the system, didn't have the surrounding talent to consistently get him the ball so you could see the rest of it, because he's also pretty dang good after the catch because he's so smooth and athletic. But he, when you look into the advanced numbers as well, you can see the manifestation of this, where he was Rutgers' leading receiver for the last 3 years, the last two of which he doubled up or more the number two receiver. And people like, I would point back to why this is important. Like the, for like coming to you guys from Minneapolis, I was too low on Justin Jefferson coming out. A lot of people were too low on him coming out. What, one of the reasons that folks were lower on him was the idea that he might not be able to win consistently on the outside in the NFL. Cause that 1 year when he had super duper dominated and had the ridiculous stats in 2019, as you guys know, he had been moved into the slot cause they had the two stud young kids on the outside, Jamar Chase and Terrace Marshall. And that's, you know, Jefferson dominating there, but you look at the previous season when Jefferson was on the outside and they were, you know, it was the last year where it's like the vestiges of like the old Les Miles, you know, old school type offense or whatever. Jefferson that year doubled up the number two receiver. Like he was the dude and he was beating people on the outside. He had a very high market share of LSU's, you know, production and everything. It's just the overall numbers didn't look as good because of the quarterback it was the same quarterback, but because of the situation that played Burrow's game down and he didn't get as many touches. But I think looking at the market share for some of those guys where your eyes are telling you, you know, something sort of different, you can sort of, that can sort of line it up. And for all those reasons, and plus he tested well, I'm really bullish on Bo Melton. I would be sitting dead red on him if I needed a receiver and we got to day three.
For time constraints here, I'm going to burn through a couple names and you can just say in or out. And if you want to throw in some mustard on it, go ahead. But we're just going to burn through these so we can get to the tight ends before the show's over here. Tyquan Thornton for Baylor.
Oh, I like Tyquan Thornton. If I'm allowed, I'm in. yeah, he's very specific as he's going to be a number two receiver in the NFL. And NFL fans that, you know, going back a little bit, people that are my age or older, I guess I'll say you can think of like Elvin Harper, right? Remember on those offenses, Elvin Harper was just used to shove the defense back to take more guys out of the box and to make sure that you couldn't always double team, you know, for instance, Irvin or whatever, and provide more, you know, spacing for Novacek too, like on the, you know, intermediate level, stuff like that. The if you need a number two pop the top guy, I think Tyquan Thornton's your guy. But prior to last season, it's so going back to the context thing, prior to last, and George Pickens had a context issue at quarterback when he came back this past season. But in Thornton's case, prior to this past season, he was playing with this noodle arm quarterback, Charlie Brewer, who's he's analogous to Clifford or Brock Purdy in this class, I suppose, that they just can't get the ball reliably beyond 25 yards. It's an adventure. Yeah. Anytime it goes beyond 25 yards, Tyquan Thornton's whole game, his trump card is beating you downfield. And then he can make the play downfield. As we saw when Jerry Bohannon took over Bohannon has a lot of warts. I'm not sure that we'll be talking about him as an NFL prospect when he comes out, but he can get the ball down the field. And so
got an arm.
He's got an arm. And so Thornton just took over some of these games, you know, when Baylor, you know, last year, Baylor was awesome. Their defense was awesome. And then what their offense, it was grinding the early yards with Smith, but Smith could not have done that if the opposing teams were able to get up in the box. The reason you could not do that was because Tyquan Thornton was so dangerous on the outside. And then he went to Indianapolis and proved the speed. So thumbs up on him as well.
How about Kevin Austin from Notre Dame?
Kevin Austin, the reason he concerns me is just because I didn't see that testing on the field. I didn't think he was as athletic. He didn't take games over with his athleticism. He wasn't there's some guys that are so athletic on certain reps that, you know, they'll just dominate, you know, no one can stop him from scoring a touchdown on the other side. If they're a corner, they just erase a guy, like take away his will to sort of finish the rep. But I didn't sort of see that ascendance of it with Austin. We've seen some guys that are, you know, very, very athletic that over their college careers, we didn't see the manifestations of it as much on the field. Going to the NFL, I think, you know, more often than not, it's just an issue of they're more track athletes as far as that goes, and they train really well for the event than the things on the field. But I think at least with the testing profile, you have to tick them up a little bit. Even if you were low on him going in, you just have to, because you can't count athletic testing twice. But if you didn't count it the first time around, you got to count it. And so I'm not going to go all the way with that into my evaluation, because I don't think it manifests 100% on the field. But I'm certainly toggling that aspect of his evaluation up. And it, by definition, that increases the value a bit.
Any other wide receivers you want to ask Thor about here, Pat, or should we go to tight ends?
Let me just circle back to tier one real quick with you, Thor, and one guy. And this is going to sound blasphemous to a lot of people, I think, because this guy's regarded as one of the top guys in the class and averaged 11 catches a game in his final year at USC, Drake London. So we know he is a guy who wins with contested catches. He's great at high pointing the ball, at walling off defenders, at doing all that, and not an elite speed guy and not an elite separator.
We know he's somewhere between Mike Evans and N'Keal Harry.
And that's the thing. Like, that's we have seen this from like these Pac-10 receivers before. Like, so how do we know that this guy is going to be Michael Pittman or better and not another N'Keal Harry or JJ Arcega Whiteside?
Pat dating himself with the Pac-10 reference.
Right now, Pac-12. I'm sorry. My goodness.
I'm just happy you didn't also evoke Hakeem Butler, who is one of my evaluations for me over the last couple of years. But I mean, you know, I learned a lesson with Hakeem Butler and, you know, some of these, you know, guys coming in where, you know, with, you know, separation or guys that were led with their contested, you know, catch, ability or whatever with London. I think points well taken. The two things that I would point to that sort of transcends him a bit above some of those other guys in that phylum, where even though I'm sort of pessimistic on guys that are led by the contested catch for the ball skill thing, where not that I give him a pass, I'm not saying that at all, but like where I think he's on the way upper echelons of it for two reasons. I'll actually say three. Number one, he's built well. He's, you know, I think it was, he measured in just a shade under 6'4". But which was a little bit was an inch or two lower than he was listed, I believe, at USC. But his wingspan is that of a 6'6" guy, and you see every inch of that manifest on the field. And he can also get up there. And then this brings me to my second point of the ball skills being like ridiculous. Like, you know, even for the ball skill, the downfield ball skill guys in the same exact same phylum as him, his ball skills stand out above those guys over the last 5 years. I've been doing the draft stuff, specifically the rankings, like with that longer than that. So I'll just say up till then, these last 5 years, I would put his ball skills at the top amongst these guys that we're talking about. And the other thing is, with the agility, that's the one part that I'm not going to say that I think he lacks it, but like where it's sort of just a gray area on his evaluation for me right now. But I'm more bullish on his speed than I think a lot of people. First of all, I've seen it on the field. Don't get me wrong. He's not Christian Watson fast. He's not Garrett Wilson fast. He's not Olave fast. He's not Malik Willis fast, but like, that he's, you know, fast on the field for a player his type. I think he ran. I saw an analytics Twitter feed that they have put out his top speed from a high school game. It was like, but did one of you guys see the his miles per hour speed on the field? Have you seen any of I didn't see it.
What was okay. it was in the low 20s there?
It was like 22, 23. Jeez. It might have even been 20, but it was 22 is probably correct. I would be, if I had longer, I'd be able to pull the thing up. But this was in high school, and the at least according to this guy's or this company's analytics, it was 87th. He was 87th percentile in terms of top speed. You would think that would be in relation to college guys if it was in the low 20s, but that wasn't, or maybe even, you know, NFL. I don't know, but that wasn't specifically referenced. But the clip was from high school. He can run in a straight line for sure. And like I said, he can get up, and then he has the catch rate, you know, as I put it, he has the catch radius of an Indian god, and he's catching anything that you get within it. So he's just such a weapon downfield, and I would love to see him on a team, for instance, the Buffalo Bills, because Josh Allen's got that world-class bazooka, and with Drake London, you cannot defend him one-on-one downfield. There's not a corner in the NFL that I trust going up one-on-one with him. So you almost need help on Drake London's side of the field at all times when he's going to, you know, push it past the safety level or whatever. So that's the one thing you got. Think about the manifestation of the spacing for every other player. Again, going back, football is a game of one guy helps the other guy, you know, everything is interconnected or whatever. You put him on that team. Now on the other side, Stephon Diggs, it's really difficult to double team Stephon Diggs or roll coverage at him on every single play. Right. And so now he has more spacing. Now your slot receiver has more spacing. Now they can't gang up on your runner, or, you know, Josh Allen as a runner, you're seeing more thinned out boxes. So I think that's the value that he brings to an NFL team.
Let's talk about some tight ends here, Thor. And this class is okay. Like, there's a lot of fantasy options here, surprisingly. The tight ends overall, there's nobody's going to go in day one. I think it's going to be a smattering of guys in day two, which could be big. Like, just seeing who jumps into this day two could be huge. But Trey McBride is like tier one, kind of by himself, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think I evoked him earlier, you know, talking about, you know, not so often you see this with tight ends. You see it more with receivers, as far as like in their on their college team, they're so much better than all the other options that their team invariably just, instead of sort of doing normal football plays, it's more an intellectual exercise by the coach of just, how can we force this guy the ball as much as possible? Like, how can we, you know, manufacture touches for him as often as possible? And I mean, you saw this past season, like, especially Colorado State just funneled all the touches that they could at Trey McBride. He lines up. He can line up anywhere. You know, you can put him out wide. You can put him in the slot. He can play in line. You know, he's not going to be the sort of, you know, destroyer type blocker, or maybe effective against like the war daddy athletic trump card type edge rushers, like the super duper long athletic speed guys, the speed of power guys. But he gives effort as a blocker. And, you know, I like him more in that element, is, you know, in space and stuff like that. And that's the other thing he can do, is like the H-backy stuff moving around. But he doesn't take stuff off the table with that. He at least provides an impediment and gives effort. And then as a receiver, he's just really smooth. You know, I mean, like, you saw these ducks that he was having to save, you know, last year with the quarterback he was playing with. And, you know, I mean, like, he was a marked man. You know, especially you'd see this in the red zone, where the few times that Colorado State got there, but, you know, like, they would just send, I mean, he was double teamed and or triple teamed. They were just like, you're not getting the ball inside the 20 because you guys can't really do anything else. And we know Adazio will kick field goals on fourth and one. So we're not letting McBride score the touchdown. But like, you know, I mean, outside of that, you know, I mean, even against double teams, even, you know, around traffic with guys draped over his back, everything like that was just so reliable all season. I really like his hands, smooth route runner. He brings a lot to the table as a receiver, doesn't take a lot off the table with the other stuff.
Pat, which tight ends do you want to quiz Thor on here? Because we are bumping up against it, but is there one that stands out to you that you got to get Thor's opinion on?
I mean, Jeremy Ruckert has always stood out to me. He's played in so many big games. We've seen a lot of him, you know, in like the biggest stages. Do you think he is going to be a quality receiving tight end in the NFL, Thor?
My answer now is different than it would have been in early February, but before I went down to Mobile. But I would say yes now. You know, he got to play a lot at Ohio State. He was never featured as a receiver. And so, like, you know, I've talked in this, you know, during this hour about some of the players where you had questions with a specific thing on their athletic profile or whatever. With Ruckert, the question was exactly what you just asked, right? Because, you know, I mentioned, you know, that Ohio, it wasn't just Olave and Wilson. It's also wide receiver one for next year, Jackson Smith and Jigba, and also Jameson Williams. And then, of course, you had dual threat quarterbacks. You had, you know, a stable of awesome running backs. And so Ruckert just wasn't featured as much in
underutilized in, for sure.
Absolutely. Yes. And it was just like, you don't have enough, you know, at a certain point, the balls run out. That's the reason that Jameson Williams didn't want to leave. Like, he probably had a bunch of friends there and all that sort of stuff. But I was playing for a good team, but like, he needed those targets to show the NFL what he could do. That was the part of Ruckert's game that we didn't see as much, but the kid can block. He's versatile. You know, you can do different stuff with him, moving him around. He can absolutely play in the inline. You know, there's a lot of guys in tight ends in this class that are basically glorified big slots, or actually they literally are just big slots. Whereas Ruckert, you know, he's an inline guy, and the receiving skill, I think people went back to the tape on it after Mobile, because he showed, I mean, the best hands of maybe any pass catcher there, like this side of Christian Watson. Like, I'm certainly including the tight ends, but I'm also tossing in the receivers on that too. You know, he was running the solid routes, you know, no sort of deep stuff, but like, was running routes and gaining separation short. And then he was bailing quarterbacks out, you know, with catches both, you know, outside of his frame and then also off of the carpet. So I think he's got more skill with that than he was able to show in college, because he didn't get the opportunity. You saw flashes of it, you know, when they toss in the ball, but he was always, you know, every time that he was throwing the ball in college, it was because the quarterback had finally gotten down to like the fourth or fifth option. Like, that's, you know, that was sort of his lot. But, you know, I mean, the only tight end that would have gotten balls playing at that college here over the past several years would have been Kyle Pitts, you know, right? Like, outside of that, it doesn't matter who your tight end is. The receivers are so nasty, you're going to throw them the ball. So I'm bullish on Ruckert. I would say, I think he's a sleeper.
Now, we probably only have one time for one more tight end, Thor. So, dealer's choice. Who is someone that you feel like we're not talking about enough and could be an awesome fantasy option coming up here, depending on landing spot?
I would say a guy like I think people know about Dulcich and guys like that. So I'll go just a little bit deeper. Jelani Woods from Virginia. He's very long, very smooth. He's athletic. And the thing that he does that
he was a Feldman freak, wasn't he?
He might've been. Yeah. Very, very good athlete. And basically has the ideal build for what he is, which is a seam stretcher. Shows awesome hands down there. Very smooth. Catches the ball smooth. And then the thing I like about the tight end, like some of the tight ends, they have to like, you know, at least their momentum is impeded by the sort of the burden of having to catch the ball, you know, particularly when they're on the move or whatever, you know, if not outright sort of turn around for it. But like, Woods is one of those guys who can seamlessly pluck the ball, you know, even over his shoulder, like stuff like that, and then keep trucking downfield. He goes from being a receiver to a runner instantaneously, very fluidly. I like him a lot. I know that he's going to be able to challenge the seam consistently in the NFL, and he's also going to be a red zone target as well. So by definition, I think he's a guy that fantasy owners need to keep their eye on.
Thor, we did it, man. Thank you for joining us to cover wide receivers and tight ends. Remember, you can follow him on the Twitter at ThorKU. Please tell us what you have coming up, what you're working on, and what is in the future for you. Please let everyone know where they can find all that great work.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ThorKU, and you can find my work at NBC Sports Edge. We're I dropped a 3-round mock a couple of weeks ago, and then ever since then been going into my position rankings and starting to drop those. Finish the quarterbacks. The running backs are over the next 2 days. I'm actually going to be publishing one here in about 15 minutes after we get off. The first part of my running backs, the second part will be tomorrow, and then receivers next, tight ends, you know, and just sort of ramping up until, you know, I do the Thor 500, you know, the week before the draft or whatever with 500 player big board with 500 comps. So it's always about, you know, sort of getting your scouting reports out there, finalizing your rankings, getting those out there in advance, and then sort of building up to that. So find that stuff on NBC Sports Edge.
Awesome. Pat, look, I'm going to let you talk next week because you and I are going to be planting flags on players that we like in this class, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But in the meantime, in between, where can people find your stuff and what do you got coming up here?
Yeah. Be sure to visit Fantasy Pros and look at our Dynasty Draft Kit, because if you're watching the show, you are into fantasy. So you're going to want to check that out. And now we turn our attention to the NFL draft too. And, you know, while I may be spending a tenth of the amount of time on it that Thor is, we're going to have some good stuff there too. So, you know, be sure to check out Thor's stuff and be sure to check out Fantasy Pros as well.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I will be hosting this show. Of course, I'll be on CFP Winning Edge with Nick and Xavier. You can find all of my work with the Welsh, especially for all you seam heads. A lot of baseball going on. I'm flying into Phoenix for opening day on Thursday. So that's going to be very, very exciting. And we have the NFL draft stuff. I mean, that's like on the plane and on my breaks, I'm working on draft stuff, but I'm there to watch some baseball. So it's going to be a fun week for me for sure. But remember, you can follow all my work at Bogman Sports on the Twitter, and we will see you guys next week. Take it easy, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast hosts Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.